I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether that's a 5K run, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute dip in the sea, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. This season, I've teamed up with Spotlight Oral Care. I know how important oral care is to our overall health and how we really need to look after our teeth and gums by using the best products. I've been using the Spotlight Oral Care Sonic Toothbrush and I love that it gives me that dentist clean feeling and is much more effective than a manual brush and less abrasive. Use the discount code GOODGLOW25 on spotlightoralcare.com to get 25% off the entire range. Why not pick up some perfect stocking fillers this Christmas and get them delivered straight to your front door? This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Liz Costigan-Fleury. Liz became pregnant with her twin boys and was in complete shock for a time, but having trained as a yoga teacher, knew how to stay calm and zen and go with the flow. But her waters broke at 23 weeks and she went to the coomb and was told she wasn't going home. She moved in as her babies were monitored every 4 hours for the next 5 weeks until they made their way into this world. Today, Liz tells me about her journey, what happened next, and how her two healthy and happy little boys have changed her life. This is an amazing story. Liz told me at 23 weeks, she desperately searched the internet looking for stories of babies who survived after waters breaking so early. And she wants other people in the same position to know that there is light at the end of the tunnel. Liz, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
We met each other a couple of years ago and I suppose you were at the start of this incredible journey you've been on over the last couple of years. And I think I met you before you got pregnant. So yeah. I'm so excited today to sit down with you, spend some time with you and I suppose hear everything that's gone on in your life over the last couple of years.
Yeah, there's been a huge amount of change over the last few years for sure.
Yeah. So when I met you, you were so into wellness, you were mindfulness, meditation, yoga, you were all things wellness. So has that taken a bit of a backseat over the last couple of years?
No, to be honest, it's actually served me so well over the last few years because, as I'm sure we'll go into, things have been quite tough over the last 2 years for us. So my yoga practice, while it's not as physical as it used to be, it certainly is a part of my daily routine as such. You know, the mindfulness part, the meditation really helped me last year when things were tough. And so it's definitely still part of my life. It's who I am, you know. It's not just my job, it's something that I'm just so passionate about, and it's part of my day-to-day life, you know. I was a fitness trainer as well, which is kind of, that has definitely taken a backseat because I don't have the time really to do what I used to do, and training all the time, going to the gym, going on runs and all that kind of stuff. That doesn't happen anymore as much.
And that will come back in time, I'm sure. But tell us a little bit about what life was like for you before you got pregnant.
So, as you said, I was into yoga, meditation, mindfulness. I got into that, I suppose, going right back. I studied languages in college and I loved that. There was like my two passions were languages and fitness when I was going to college, and I thought, which one will I do? So I went to college and did languages because I thought that's the one that where the career will come from. And I spent a good few years in the corporate world working with my French. I studied French and German translation, so spent a good few years in that, loved it. But we went away for a year. We travelled the world for a year, myself and my now husband. At the time, he was my boyfriend. And when I came back from that, I thought, no, I really want to give the fitness part of things a go. And I feel like now is the right time. And we've kind of done the corporate piece and we did the world trip. And it just sounded so cliche, you know, come back off your world tour and change your life. So that's what I did. I did in 2008. I went back to college to study fitness and I worked as a personal trainer every corner of Dublin. I trained people in the first few years. I was a spin instructor, I'd run clubs, all of that. So I did that for a few years, loved it. But yoga was kind of always my, you know, it was always a passion of mine, but at the time it wasn't kind of as fast paced and quick. And I was in that kind of my early 20s where I, well, kind of mid to late 20s, where I wanted the perfect body. So yoga was a little bit too easy, a little bit too, it wasn't intense enough for me. So I eventually worked through all that stuff that had me there and decided to become a yoga teacher. So I did my training in Samadhi and I just... That changed my life, I think, on so many levels. Like the yoga teacher training just, it helped me heal so much. You know, a lot of the body stuff that I had in my 20s, had a lot of kind of body issues, to put it mildly, in my 20s. And I think that year that we did the teacher training really helped me to kind of, you know, accept myself, because a lot of the whole yoga practice is about acceptance, about present moment awareness, living in the now and all that kind of stuff that kind of rolls off the tongue as, you know, it's just what everyone says. But, you know, when you truly live it and study it, you know, it really just helped to heal me so much. So then the business, for want of another word, became more kind of yoga focused. And I suppose I always kind of knew I'd end up having to slow down. I think deep down inside, I knew I was going to have to slow it down. I mean, I'd be teaching a class at 6 a.m. in Clontarf and finishing the evening at 9 o'clock in City West. Like, it was just madness. And so when I became a yoga teacher, it just naturally slowed down. I took less work, I suppose, and my own internal was slower. And then I began to do yoga retreats. So I do a few yoga retreats a year and I love that. I really miss that at the moment. And I suppose, yeah, that took me up to then 2018, where we got pregnant.
So what was, you know, because I feel like we were kind of in touch a lot around that time.
Yeah.
And you were great pals with Audrey and we were always kind of trying to meet up and do things. And then we heard you were pregnant and we were all so happy for you because I think you really were ready, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, we had a miscarriage in 2017, which is around the time that we had met. And I think we were ready, but we were still, there was always a kind of, I suppose we were loving our life so much, Seb and I. You know, we were traveling loads. I loved what I was doing. I was doing loads of different bits and bobs with the yoga and the fitness, like the, you know, events and things. And I just was really happy, like so happy where we were. And I was really worried. I was really worried about changing that. Like, I wouldn't be a fan of change, so I was just worried about what that would mean and would I be able to be a good mom, and, you know, would our relationship survive all that, you know, the pressure that, you know, a child brings into a relationship. But around the time when we did get pregnant, we had decided to kind of try one last time, for want of another phrase, but, you know, we'd just give it one more go, and if it didn't work for us, then, you know, we'd happily just live our life. And I trust in something greater than us, than me. And I just said to myself, like, if, you know, if it's meant to be, it will be this one last time.
So tell us, when did you find out you were having twins?
Oh, God, we found out we were having twins probably it's probably this time 2 years ago. Yeah. So it was really early on. So we first of all found out we were pregnant. And like, it was really early, like 2 weeks or however early you can get the scans. And we were really shocked because it was kind of the first time we'd, you know, really focused on, you know, making it happen properly. And oh great, it's worked, one last time, it's worked. Oh, what, you know, what we've asked for is actually happening. And then we went to my consultant then, like a week later, I think it was, I can't remember, it's all such a fuzz now. And she said, I can see two sacs. And I said the F word. I couldn't believe it. I was just like, and I'm sure lots of people say that but don't admit to it, but I did. I was just like, wow, okay. Now, so what she did say to me was, you know, just calm down, because, you know, that might, it's really early on, that might turn into one, you know, or it might turn into three. And we won't know that until we can scan later. So come back to me in a week's time. So for a week, Georgie, and I really think that this helped us. For a week, we were thinking, what if we have triplets?
Wow.
So it didn't go from like, oh, we're having twins. It was more like, what if we have triplets? Oh my God, we have triplets. Oh my God, we can't. How will we cope? We've only got, sorry, two of us. And then with following, we came back and she said it's twins. So
did you feel in your gut that it was twins?
So I hoped it was twins. Hoped it was twins. I had put twins on my manifestation board in 2013 and 14. And then I hadn't really thought about it after that. Mm. I'd put them on my manifestation list. Not, it wasn't a board, it was a list. And the truth is, because I thought like twins will be just so much easier because you'll just have them and then you'll like take a year or two out of your life and that's it then. I wish I could go back to that 2013-14 self and tell her the truth. It's quite different, the reality. But I think there was a massive sense of overwhelm. There was a massive sense of overwhelm.
And responsibility.
Yeah. And just, I just couldn't understand. I couldn't believe that this was happening. I couldn't believe that everything was going to change. And for probably 10 to 11 weeks, I was in a state of shock and overwhelm. Like I wasn't. And I'm sad about that too. I'm sad that, you know, I didn't have that kind of over the moon feeling. I was just completely overwhelmed. There's no other word. It was just, it was the word of 2019 for us.
And what was people's reaction? Like when you say twins, what do people say?
Like anyone who has kids is like, oh my God. Oh God. As if to say, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And then, you know, but most people are just like, wow, you know. But I don't think I even thought about the twin aspect of it. For me, at the very beginning, it was more like, oh my God, I'm becoming a mother. Mm. So I don't think, I really honestly don't think I thought about the twin actually having two physical humans until they came home. The actual, you know, what most people think about when they think about twins, they're like, oh my God, the logistics and how are we going to do this? I didn't really think about that, Georgie, till they came home from hospital. Initially, as I say, for the first 10 or 11 weeks, it was just complete overwhelm and shock. And then I settled into it. And a really good friend of mine, Kitty, who's another yoga teacher, she said to me, you need to go and do a yoga, a pregnancy yoga teacher training course with Uma Dinsmore Tooley. What a name. But she said, you need to go and do something like that where you're into the whole goddess connection to Mother Earth, all of this. So I thought, why not? I went to London for a week and I did that. And it was the best thing I ever did because I was surrounded with either pregnant people or, you know, it was all about pregnancy. And it was just divine.
Did you feel so grateful?
I felt so grateful. And yeah. I was the only pregnant mum of twins there. So I just felt like the queen bee. And everyone was just pregnant with regular babies, whereas I had twins, you know. So it was just really nice. I felt really special and I started to really then realise the gift that I had and the fact that, like, you know, this is a gift and it is a big change. But so I came home from that, you know, kind of just, I slowed down as well because... I don't know if you experience that, but you kind of want the pregnancy almost to fit into your life. And I think that's the world we live in. And I kind of settled more into a feeling of, you know, well, I can't because I'm pregnant. And I felt okay about that. Uma is the teacher who did the teacher training. She's all about, you know, the fact that slowing down and finding peace and doing things, you know, a lot easier with less stress and busyness is a superpower. And I always had this idea, it's awful, but I'm just being honest, I used to have this idea that when you were pregnant you were weaker and you couldn't do as much and like that was a bad thing. And I think that message can be the message out there for women. You know, you still need to work as hard as you did. You're just pregnant. You can still go for your runs and teach your spinning classes and your yoga classes. And while you absolutely can, it's important to know that it's okay to sit back as well. And it's a welcome time to be able to kind of hibernate within yourself and look after yourself. So that's what I did. So that was probably around, as I say, what, week 14? So I enjoyed that for a short 9 weeks because at 23 weeks, my waters broke. Yeah.
At home?
At home in bed at like 1 a.m.
Why do these things always happen in the middle of the night?
In the middle of the night. and Seb was asleep, and I thought I'd peed myself. So I was like, this is the beginning of the end now. Like, I know my relationship's going to change and stuff, but I didn't think this is going to happen yet. So I was like, I'm just going to creep into the toilet and I'm going to tell him about this. It's going to be fine. Because I had nothing. I hadn't anything read. I didn't know what water is breaking was supposed to feel like. Was it like, I didn't know anything about any of that, because at this point, if you can understand, I was kind of still in my first trimester trying to kind of enjoy it. You know, I'd wasted a lot of time overwhelmed. I know I had to go through that to get to where I was. But anyway, realised that my waters had broken. I woke Seb and we live really close to the Coombe. So we rang and we just said, what do we need to do? We hadn't a clue, Georgie. So they said, come in right away. This is big. And I remember crying my eyes out down the canal thinking, you did this because you were the one who didn't want this for 10 weeks. You were the one who was doubting this. You were the one, you know, and there's so many people out there trying so hard. And yet you're like, I don't think I will. Maybe I will. Maybe I won't. And I just felt so guilty. Yeah. And when we got to the Coombe, this beautiful woman, midwife, came in and examined me. And like, I'd never really been in hospital. I'm a bit of a scaredy cat when it comes to needles and things like that. And she just put me on a drip and checked. And my cervix hadn't opened, which means that you're not, labour hasn't begun. So that's the best news for someone whose waters has broken. So that was great news. And I just had to kind of, we were sent up to St. Gerard's ward, which was the ward that I was in when I lost the bit, because we had a miscarriage in 2017. And when we lost that baby, we were sent up to that ward. Oh, so God. All the signs were just a bit shitty.
Did you feel like there was a chance that you could lose your
babies? Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So at that point, it was all just like, lie down, your consultant will be in the morning. And so she arrived the next morning and she was just like, this isn't great. We need to scan you. And it was all very unclear what was going on. And one thing I remember doing, which I know is the thing you're not supposed to do, but go on the internet. But all I wanted to find was somebody whose waters had broken at 23 weeks. And that's why I think, you know, doing this and talking about it is so important, because there's a girl whose waters are going to break at 23 weeks and will hear this somewhere, sometime, and know that, you know, there's a good news story at the end of it.
I've chills that you said that.
It's like, that's the God's honest truth. That's what I did. And I couldn't find I didn't want an 18 week or 25 week. I wanted 23 week, or I wanted someone to tell me it was going to be OK.
And were you, how big was your bump at this stage?
So to hear, it was big. I mean, I was very pregnant at that point, 23 weeks here, especially a twin pregnancy. You know, I was big, but I was neat and was I still running? No, I had stopped running about 3 or 4 weeks before that. I was still able to cycle. And all of this was advised by my consultant. I mean, I'd known her since 2017. And she had said to me, you know, keep doing what you're doing, listen to your body, you know, and like, I was good at that. I feel like I did listen and I did put my feet up when I needed to. And one of the first things she said to me was, this could have happened anywhere, Liz, but I'm so happy it happened in your bed, because if this had happened on your yoga mat or wherever, you'd have blamed yourself. And she said, pre-prom baby, like, it's not your fault. There's so many reasons why this happened, and they don't actually know why. Like, they couldn't say to me, oh, Liz, it's because you drank too much coffee, or because you didn't do this, or you didn't have that. So then I suppose there was, it was that week we were in St. Gerard's from week 23 to 24, because that's a really, it's a really difficult time, because before week 24, your babies aren't considered viable, which is a horrible word. It's like, they're not, you know, real, I suppose, or it's basically that if they are born at 23 weeks, you've got the option to resuscitate or just let them go. So, you know, you've all of those conversations to have. And, you know, beautiful Prof White, he came in and told us, you know, if the babies are born this week, they'll have, you know, 10% chance of survival. If they're born next week, it'll be. And he was really matter of fact. And I grew to love him so much. I loved them all. My God, they were like a family there. But he really just spelled it out with, you know, very little emotion that. And we knew, we sat there and I mean, the range of emotions that you go through, from I don't want to lose my babies to, you know, because he had said to me that my life was also, you know, at risk, you know, if I got infections. And it was all about infections at that point. If I got infected, if they got infected, that was kind of the big problem, I suppose, at that point. So Sebastian was really focused on me, and he was really worried about me. All he kept saying was, you know, I don't care about anything else. I just don't want you to die. Like, I never wanted this. Like, this is not what we wanted. And I kept thinking that, oh, it was just so hard. I kept thinking, what if we have twins and they're both really sick, and we've got two sick babies, and how are we going to cope with two sick babies? And oh my God. And oh, and there was just awful, horrible, horrible thoughts going through your mind. You know, that you wouldn't even say out loud sometimes. But so that was week 23 to 24. And then at 24 weeks, then after that, you have to have the babies, if you understand, you know. So between 23 and 24 weeks, if you go into labor, you can just say, no, I don't want to have the babies. But if you go into labor at 24 weeks, they will do everything in their power to save the babies. Now, some people's view on that is, that's great, that's brilliant. But then other people's views is, you know, that's not so great, because 24 week babies are, you know, they're not, they haven't had as much time to grow. And yeah, it's a tricky subject. But we did really well. My consultant, so I was basically told I couldn't go home, that I had to stay here for the duration of my pregnancy. Now, you know me, and I love to move and like live my life, you know. I'm not a person who stays in and just kind of chills, and I'm an extremely active person and social person, and I just couldn't believe that I was being put on bed rest in the hospital for the next, what could be, 20 weeks. And so that took over for a while. So there was all sorts of different emotions, Georgie. And I don't remember everything very clearly either, but I do remember a good chunk of that kind of second week in hospital feeling so sorry for myself.
Were you in a room by yourself?
No, I was sharing, which was another problem for me too, because I love my space, but then I love to be social, and then you're in a hospital space. It was just like everything you're used to, just all your reality just changes within an instance. I just felt so sorry for myself.
I remember that time, and knowing you and knowing, you know, what you filled your days with and the yoga and everything. I remember thinking, oh my God, because I think you were posting a little bit around that time.
I was, yeah.
How you were passing your time and stuff. And I just remember thinking, whoa, that's tough.
Yeah, it was. It really was. It was. And like, you know, tough is a word we're using a lot now, and hard and difficult. But there are no words to, you know, that, you know, you, like, it's just heart-wrenchingly difficult. But I decided that, and this is my yoga practice, I believe, and my meditation practice just kind of gave me that inner strength to go, okay, right, there's nothing I can do now. And then, like, my straight talking husband, you get a little bit of crying and a little bit of sympathy, but then you just got to brush it off, which can be like hard to swallow sometimes, but it's great when you're kind of in the depths of it. And
day in, day out, are you scanned?
So you're every 4 hours, you're scanned. So they put on your, oh God, I can't remember the name of that, but they put these little thingy-majigs onto your belly to listen to the baby's heartbeat. And that's every 4 hours. So you never get to have a full night's sleep. So, yeah, you know, I was done out of the last few months of like chilling like a villain, you know, before the babies came. My baby moon, my baby shower. I'm not over that. But yeah, so they scan us every four, or scan me every 4 hours. And then once a week, they have this thing called the Doppler scan, which shows the blood flow through the brain and the body to the heart and the lungs, just to make sure the boys were doing, at that point, I didn't know they were boys, that they were doing okay. But I wasn't in any pain. I was continuously leaking because... So what had actually happened was, so twin one, which was Jules, down below, his sac. So they were in separate sacs. So Jules' sac broke, and his amniotic fluid was what, you know, my waters were. And so his they don't repair, unfortunately, but they do, they repair a little bit, but not enough. So you just, that's why you have to stay on bed rest. So he's kept in its little film of amniotic fluid instead of this big balloon of amniotic fluid. So that's where infection can come in for him and me. Whereas Zach was up here and he was untouched like the whole way through. So his waters didn't break until like the very end, or his sac at least. And so, I mean, if there's any midwives listening, they're like, she's saying this all the wrong way. But you know what I mean? It's still something. Yeah, you get me. So, yeah, so I had to stay, as I say, on bed rest, and they did all those tests to make sure the boys were okay. And I was just in the hospital all day long. So I can't, what I did was I kind of brought what I would usually do into the day. So usually I'd wake up and I had a morning practice, and I tried to do that in the hospital. Like, they all thought I was absolutely batshit crazy, but I'd get up and I'd have my shower, and I had plants, and I'd, like, you know, posters and pictures and everything. I'd take that posters on my wall because I missed the Take That concert, and I missed the Rod Stewart concert because I was in there. So I had like pictures and candles and everything, even though I couldn't light them, but lots of lovely stuff at my bed to make it just like feel like home. And I'd get up and I'd have my shower, and I'd come back and I'd sit up and I'd eat my breakfast. And like, I'm conscious of how I eat. So I had like all my own granola, and they thought I was just the hippy dippy. All the women would slag me because I wouldn't eat the cornflakes and the white toast. And Seb would come in every morning with my green juice. Like, he's just, I swear, the best. So he'd come in every morning on his way to work, and that was his way of kind of minding me and us. And then my mum and dad would call in the morning, and we'd walk to the car park and stand in the car park. And then, you know, I'd meditate. I wasn't allowed to walk much, but my walk to the car park was my little walk. And when the good weather came in, we bought deck chairs and we sat outside the coom.
So you basically just moved in.
Moved in. Like, we were crying when we left. Most people who spend 3 months in ICU are absolutely delighted to get out of it. We bawled when we left because they were our family. They were the boys' first home. I'm still pals with the nurses who looked after them. They hung out with the boys more than I did in their first 3 months. And you can be really pissed off that that's what happened, but they were amazing people, and that's just the way it was. So I just tried to become pals with them because we were in there all day. Well, I was in there all day, every day.
Wow. I'll get back to that conversation in just a minute, but first, I wanted to give you an update on my Sonic toothbrush. Great teeth start with Spotlight Oral Care's Sonic toothbrush, the oral care staple. Designed with both efficiency and comfort in mind, it ensures an amazing clean, as it is gentle and effective in removing plaque and discoloration, even for sensitive teeth. The 2-minute timer and high frequency brush movement, along with 3 speed settings for personalized cleaning, sensitive, clean, and white, will improve your long-term oral health. With a travel case and personalization options available, it's the ideal gift for you or a loved one this Christmas. Check out spotlightoralcare.com for more. Now, back to my conversation.
So what week did you get to?
So, yes, we got to 28 weeks. We were told, Nadine told us, look, 28 is like the first. Before 28, we're talking lots and lots of complications and a long time in here, and probably, you know, coming back a lot when the boys are out. So get to 28, but ideally get into the 30s. So everything was good. I felt amazing. At that point, I was allowed out at weekends for like the day, and we weren't allowed to stay out overnight. But I had my 39th birthday. And we went to the park, and it was the best birthday ever. It was just so simple.
Did you get to go home on those days?
Got to go home, you know, from 10 till 5, and then you had to come back. But it was great. It was amazing. It was just so nice. And it really kind of gave you that boost. And so you just had to get through the working week, you know, Monday to Friday, and then you get to go home on Saturday and Sunday for a few hours. So that really kept us going. And there was another girl in there at the same time as me. She was a singleton mom, and she was a similar situation to me. I think her waters broke at 27. But we got out for the Maybank holiday weekend, and so excited and feeling great. I came back and she was gone from the bed, and they were like, no, Neva's gone into labor, she's after having her baby. And I was like, oh my God. And I think her baby at that point was 32 weeks. So, you know, she was after doing okay, and she came back and she told me what she had felt. Like, I said, what happens? Like, what, you know, what did it feel like? And she said, you know, it just feels a bit like period pain. And then I went into labor and whatever. So let's say that was the Monday. Yeah, the bank holiday Monday. So the Tuesday, I was feeling fine. The Wednesday, feeling fine. Went to bed on the Wednesday night. And I was like, I've period pains. I told the midwife, and she was like, you've been a drama queen, you know, joking, saying, you just want to be like, Niamh, you want to go home now, it's too early, stop that. And I was like, oh, I don't know, I think they, maybe they aren't. And I would, you know, I can be a bit, you know, drama. Mm. So I thought, maybe this is just me kind of feeding off Niamh's stuff. And then I woke middle of the night, pain again. They scanned me again. They were like, no, everything seems fine. So when Seb came in at 7 o'clock with the juice, I said, this is it. Like, this is it. And he was like, no. And I said, I think so. I've got period pains and I think I'm getting contractions. So I said, right, I'm going to meditate. So I went to meditate and I couldn't, because I kept getting these contractions. So, or what I, you know, perceived to be contractions. So they came in and Seb went off to work. He's like, just keep me posted. And within an hour, he was back. I'd gone into labour at 28 weeks on the button. So that was it. The babies were coming and I cried my eyes out because I knew we weren't, like, we were going into a bit of a
scary time.
Storm, yeah. But everything just then took over. As you know, they just come in and they're scanning you. My consultant was gone for the day. She wasn't around. She was at some medical conference somewhere, but she came back and
These people are amazing, aren't they?
And one of my friends is a midwife, and she was supposed to have the day off, and she didn't take the day off because her kid couldn't get minded or something. So she came in, and when I came through the doors of the delivery suite, she's like, I wasn't even supposed to be on today, Liz. So she was my midwife, which was brilliant. So we had, dare I say it, a bit of crack in the delivery suite. Like, at that point, it was happening, you know, and I was very much like of the opinion that, you know, when I first went to Nadine about, you know, my delivery, like way back when, way before my waters had broken, I was like, I want one at home in a pool. And she was like, no, Liz, you are high risk. You have twins. You have to be like medicated in the hospital. And I was devastated at this thought. Like, I wanted it to be all so like zen and have my like salt lamp and my incense and everything. It'd be so beautiful now when I think of it. But it just wasn't for me because I was a twin mama and we're just high risk naturally. So, but the point was that I didn't want any pain medication. I kept saying, like, I don't want anything. I'm going to do this naturally and it's going to be fabulous. And I just want to feel the feels. And again, I hadn't a clue. I hadn't done my research. And, but also I was completely delusional. And so the contractions were coming. And when Nadine arrived, I said to her, like, I must be close to 10. Like, at this point, like, I have to be 8 at least. And she was like, Liz, you're like 1-2 centimetres dilated. And I thought, oh my God, gas and air, give it all. I just don't even care. So then it was just everything. They took over then, you know. I had the epidural, which was, you know, it's, you know, in your mind, the epidural, the injection going into your spine was a big thing that I had. I was nervous about that, but I kept thinking about, you know, them taking out all of the negativity, I swear. And that was leaving space just for positive energy for the boys, for them to do the work that they needed to do. So the epidural was like the taking out all of the negative stuff. And when it was happening, it really helped me, you know. And then that was it. I went in and I was sectioned. And
was that always, were you always getting a C-section or did it come down to that?
So Nadine had said to me, I know I'm jumping, sorry. Nadine had said to me, you know, try to get to 28 weeks. And when we get to 28 weeks, then we'll focus on 30 weeks. And then we'll focus on 32 weeks. And I kept saying to her, well, what will happen? Can I have a natural birth? Can I have, you know, or does it have to be a C-section? And she said, well, the boys will decide. Like, they are going to decide. Like, if they're coming and everything is well and they're well positioned and your heart is okay and their hearts are okay, and we'll go for it. But I don't think that that's going to play out that way, was what her message was. It was very much preparing me for a C-section. And to be honest, at that point, I just wanted my babies to come out really well and for us all to survive this, then, you know, and you know yourself, that's what ends up happening. You know, you've all these lovely plans, and it's great to have them plans, and it's important to have them. And lots of people have really, you know, for want of another word, normal births, where, you know, they go to their term and, you know, there's no complications and they get to have gorgeous births and stuff. And that's fine. And every birth is valid and amazing. But I just wanted them out well at that point. And yeah, so that was it. And our first baby, Jules, was born. So he was the baby who had the no amniotic fluid at that point. So he came out not breathing and blue. And I didn't see him, but Seb did. And I remember seeing Seb's face. And I knew then, like, that was, you know, probably not going to be good news. But I was very much like, it's going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. And then Zach came out and lightened the mood, which is what he's like as a little human now, because we were like, another boy. Instead of being, you know, we thought we were having a boy and a girl. I don't know why. Again, we hadn't thought much, but we had a boy and a girl's name. We had one boy and one girl's name, and that was it. We're like, what's going on here? You know, because the odds are that it could be two boys are quite high as well, you know. So instead of being kind of overjoyed that he was breathing, we couldn't believe he was a boy. But anyway, then the boys had, there was 18 doctors. There was six for them, six for me, and whatever the remainder is.
Whoa. So there was six for each of them. 20 people in the room.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
What were you thinking of?
I felt really, I mean, I was on drugs at that point. You know, I was on the gas and the air. And I felt very calm, and I really trusted them.
Yeah.
I'd never really been to the doctor. I'd never had any illness in my family, thank God. And I didn't really know much. And I was always way more interested in homeopathy and, you know, like naturally minding yourself and all that kind of stuff, because nothing big had ever happened to me. So I believe, Georgie, truly, that I was put into hospital for those 6 weeks in order for me to get over that part of my, a few reasons, I think, to get over my kind of, I suppose, fear maybe of needles and hospital and, you know, to be on my own. Never really had been on my own. I'd kind of gone from my family to a long-term boyfriend to another long-term boyfriend. I'd never really been on my own, even though I wasn't on my own. You know, this was my thing. I also never had trauma in my life, like real trauma. We all have trauma and mini traumas as we grow up, but nothing had ever happened to me. And I knew that this was my time, and this was kind of my big test as well for all of the stuff that I talk about and I believe in and I help other people with. Like, part of me along the way, when I would talk to other people who had anxiety or, you know, traumas in their life, and they'd come to me for help with meditation or yoga or whatever it was, even fitness. Fitness was a lot of people's way of minding themselves through, you know, their lives and stuff. And I would talk from a place of privilege. Like, I never had, you know, I wasn't able to say, well, when this happened to me. And while I wish it never had have happened, I know why it did, and I'm grateful for the experience. And yes, I do think that those 6 weeks were to prepare me for all of these doctors and all of this. I mean, my life was in the coom. It was 8 hours a day, 7 days a week, pretty much. So I wasn't overwhelmed when I saw them all working on the boys. They didn't really let me see it. I couldn't see the boys. I didn't see the boys till we had them at 10:38 and 10:39, and I didn't get to go up to see them until the next day at 5 o'clock. Yeah.
Wow. So what happened in those moments after?
Oh man, it was so hard. It was so hard. So straight afterwards, they were gone up to the ICU.
And did you know they were both okay?
at that point, we knew that they were both alive and okay and breathing with their ventilators. So they were in the ICU, in their incubators and okay. And so I guess I came down and I slept. And at that point, I think Sebastian was heartbroken. I think that was the time he kind of, he just realized, I think he was keeping it all together. And he just was like, yeah, he just found it all really overwhelming. And I, funnily enough, became very, I think I just kind of, the 3 months that they spent in the ICU, I don't feel like I broke down a massive amount in this, as much as I did since they've been home. I think I went on autopilot, and my main aim was colostrum, my breastfeeding. I need to breastfeed these babies need to be breastfed, I need to get the milk. And so it was all about, you know, pumping and getting the milk and getting up to see them and spending as much time with them as I could when I could. I don't remember being as devastated as I was, let's say, you know, in the first week of me being in hospital or the first weeks of us being at home. There was a weird sense of, I don't know, like trust, I suppose. Trust that they were going to be okay. Now, don't get me wrong. There was days where, you know, I would break down. I used to always do it to my dad. I'd just break down in tears to him and be like, what if they're blind? Or what if they've got like a brain thing? Or what if they're deaf? Or like, there was just so many things I was worried about, because there's so many things that can happen when they're in there. So even though they're alive and they're well, and they had these masks on their face, like I didn't see their entire faces, Georgie, for 6 weeks. I didn't hold them for 6 weeks. And I didn't see their entire, they didn't take their masks off. Like for like nearly 6 weeks. So, you know, when Pia was born and she's put on you and you see her face and you put a little hat in her and you change her nappy. Like I didn't get to do that for weeks.
What did you feel like the first time you got to see them when you said you went up at 5 o'clock?
Yeah, we have a video of that. And it's really, I'm just crying and I'm just telling Jules that it's going to be okay. And, you know, and I was just really sad and I just couldn't believe they were so small. And
could you touch them?
Yes, we're allowed to put our hands in. Okay. And just, you know, and you couldn't, like, you know, the way you'd like rub a little bit, like you couldn't rub them because their skin was so, so thin. And so you just had to place your hand on them. And these little murmurs, like the tiny little mice, you know. And then you just, as you know, when you're in a crisis, you just do what you've got to do. And people go, I don't know how you do it. And you're like, I've kind of got to do this. So that's what I'm doing. And we got into, well, I was obviously there for 5 days. We get into a routine of pumping, going up, visiting them. But, you know, in the first few days and weeks, it's very important not to visit them too much and not to have the incubators open too much, because that increases the risk of infection. And, you know, they're supposed to be in here in the dark with no noise, you know, and they're in the middle of this hospital with like loads of other little babies and patients and people coming and going and lights and all that. So you just want to give them, you know, you want to give them as much kind of quiet time as possible so that they can grow and continue to develop and stuff. So it was really, like, I'm telling you this now and I'm like, how did I cope? Like, you know, but you do, don't you? You just do for loads of different reasons.
So did you go home without the boys?
Yeah, I went home without the boys. That was a really tough day. Mm. That was a really tough day. But then, really strangely, one of the things that was kind of, I was sad about was when I was in the hospital, I was like, I'm going to come home now as a mom and Seb's going to be a dad and we're never going to be just Seb and Liz ever again. Like, you know, this is when I went in initially and I kept thinking, God, you know, we're not going to get that last night in together or that last weekend away together or anything. And so those weeks where we came home, it was 3 months, it was heart-wrenching to leave. I mean, you're leaving your baby with strangers. But once we got into that kind of a routine, we knew they were left there for a reason. Like, it wasn't, they couldn't come home. So you got to go home and have dinner together and watch a movie and pump. And it was kind of a, I do think it was a real, And I'm looking on the bright side of a really shitty situation, but it was like a chance for us to just kind of say goodbye to our old life in a way, and to prepare to have those 3 months. And we had no nursery. We had just moved into the house in the March. We had, you know, no furniture at all in the nursery. The painting and all of the decorating had just been done the week before my waters broke. So there was things like that that needed to be done. So I sat on the couch and told Seb what to do. And so, you know, there was things like that, like real practical stuff that needed to be done. So, and we were exhausted every day leaving and coming home. And it, look, I'm not going to, you know, sugarcoat it. It was really hard, but that wasn't the hardest part, you know. So that was it. We just went in every day, and I made a life for myself there. I met like one of my most gorgeous pals, Anne Marie, and her little boy Alex. They're friends for life, and Zach and Jules' first and bestest friend. Alex was born at 25 weeks, and so me and her just hung out together, and we pumped together, and we'd cry together and laugh together. And, you know, when the boys had like blood tests or eye tests, like we'd be there for each other, and it was just amazing. So that's the good thing. That's some of the good things that have come out of it.
An amazing job.
Thanks.
Amazing. So did they come home together?
No. It was like the gift that keeps giving. But again, I think, you know, no, they didn't come home. Zach came home on the 6th of July. So he was there for just 2 months, and little Jules stayed until the 31st of July. That was complicated. I think they were three of the most difficult weeks because I was trying to breastfeed both of them.
Wow.
So that was really hard. So I was pumping at home, trying to breastfeed both of them to keep them latched on, because, you know, at the beginning you have to keep them on the boob to make sure they stay on the boob. So giving them enough time with the bottle and enough time with the boob, because they were having my pumped milk in bottles. It was madness. So, you know, you can imagine that the logistics took over the emotions. I think that's what happened to me, to be honest. The emotions were kind of suppressed almost because the logistics took over. So Seb was at home, and, you know, his work was great. They were really flexible, and he was at home with Zach all day long, and I would leave in the morning and come home then in the evenings and be with Jules up in the coom. So it was lovely for Seb and Zach to have that bonding, and for me and Jules to have that bonding. And there is definitely a kind of a Zach is daddy's boy and Jules is mama's boy, a kind of a situation. But we were so supported. Like, you know, again, it's, you know, my mom, my dad, my brother's fiance, my best friend, Anne Marie, the girls, all, like, everyone, people who live here, people like my friends from abroad, like everyone just rallied around us and made sure that, you know, the transition home was the easiest it could be.
And what helped you during that time? What did you get from people that helped?
Oh, like even just, so like practically my mum and dad coming down and tidying up, and, you know, I mean, my poor father and my brother never saw like as many breasts, I think, in their life. Like, I literally was constantly topless, and it's just, you know, my poor brother and my dad were like, oh God, because I was just constantly pumping, and they would do everything for us. I mean, they'd come up and they were, you know, being there for me while I was in the ICU on my own, and Seb was down in the house, or giving, you know, Seb some time out so he could like run into town and buy some food. And my mom has been amazing, like making her famous porridge bread and her great curries and things like that. And my dad was amazing, just coming home and like changing the bins or doing a wash for us. And
oh, it all helps so
much. All of that. I mean, they're still that supportive, you know. They still help us with all of that stuff too, which is like, it's incredibly helpful and amazing, and I don't know what I'd do without them. And it's brought our family together. It's simplified things, you know, and made us realize what, I think we always realized what was important, but just kind of hammers home as you know. But that helped, and people just listening to me crying or, you know, giving out or whatever was so important. And yeah, hope.
So getting the two boys home, and obviously, like, you don't go home, it's not, you don't live happily ever after.
No.
Like, of course not. It's not that easy. But it must have been a relief to get the two of them home.
No, it was. I mean, Well, I paint. I think that's what we do as humans. We remember hard times and we're like, oh, you know, but it wasn't that bad. It was great. It was really hard. And those days, like really wet Tuesdays, I'd be going up there and thinking, why aren't I at home having my fourth trimester? That had a massive impact on me emotionally. So my fourth trimester was spent up there with the boys, not cocooning at home in bed, breastfeeding like I wanted to, or bottle feeding, but being able to do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. Everything was, you know, naturally at the schedule of the hospital and the boys there. And I was up and out, and I didn't want to be up and out. I wanted to be in bed minding myself. And, you know, that precious time for the four of us, we never had that. We never had that, because when the boys eventually came home at the end of July, they were at that point, you know, almost 3 months old, 4 months old. So cocooning and all of that wasn't an option. And then also, we had to be very careful when they came home, because they were premature babies. They were at high risk of getting very, very sick from colds, and RSV is a premature cold thing that can happen. And so we couldn't have visitors over. So we had waited 3 months to get them home. And like, my best friend's mum couldn't call, and my auntie couldn't call, and, you know, all of these kind of things. That was really tough, because they're kind of things that you associate with having a new baby and everyone coming over and, you know, having the balloons and the bubbles and all that kind of stuff. And that didn't happen for us. But it was a relief not to have to keep going up there all the time and, you know, having everything in one place and just being together and on our terms. So it was so great. And they came home with nothing, Georgie, with no illness, with no nothing. They came home so healthy. 2 weeks before Jules came home, Jan, our consultant, said to us, you know, Jules is probably going to have to go home with an oxygen tank, when, you know, the little prongs and stuff. And I just said to Jules one night, like, please, you know, you've been through enough. Like, we want to go to the park with the pram. Twins is like baggage. I don't want to have to bring an oxygen tank, please, you know. And I swear to God, he listened, and he just turned it a corner, and he didn't need the oxygen when he came home. He just gently came off it, and his lungs got stronger. And today is the day that we have our first cold. We woke up today and Zach has a cold for the very first time in 18 months, which I know isn't ideal either, because we want their immune system to be strong, but feck it, you know.
Yeah,
it could have been a lot worse. So they came out just really well and healthy, thankfully. So, but it was August, September, October. I will never forget. It was unbelievably difficult. Just crying, sleepless nights. My emotions were all over the place. I suffered really a lot in those months. Seb went back to work. We had a beautiful Lucy, our childminder, who's now gone back to New Zealand. She came as a vision of hope and help. She was just amazing. I don't know how I got through August, September, October. And to be really honest, November, December, January, those 3 months specifically, but the 6 months were unbelievably tough. Mm.
And when you're talking about November, December, January, that's into 2020.
Straight into
another
lockdown.
So you're just really out of it.
Yeah, because I went back to work. My maternity leave, I work obviously for myself, and I was doing a little few bits here and there, but my official going back and starting a new, you know, retreats and things, and I had events booked and stuff, was February 20th. And I went back to the studio, and I was loving the because Georgie, honestly, I love my boys, it goes without saying, but I don't want to be a full-time mom. And I love working, and I think me working makes me a better mom, a better person, a nicer wife. And I want them to find the joy that I did in my career, and I want to be their example of balance. And now I'm a full-time mom, and it's just, yeah, it's another difficult, you know. Mm-hmm. So we've been locked down way too much.
Right. I feel like 2021 will be a super year for you.
I feel like it too. I'm excited, because I think the boys now are at a stage where I feel well. I feel less overwhelmed by motherhood and them. Now, don't get me wrong, you know, I think you'll always be overwhelmed by motherhood for as long as you live. It's the hardest job. But I also think that you know, I just feel a little bit better in myself. And the boys are at an age now where there's more interaction because, you know, babies are kind of boring and there's not much going on. And when you're used to kind of interacting and stuff and there's nothing to do, when there's no baby kind of meetups with like mamas and there's none of that going on. And there's only so many Stack the Rings and Lego stuff that we can do. So I'm pretty bored, to be honest, of it now. And I say that obviously with all the love for the two of them. But I mean, coming out to chat to you today is like, it's like a little trip to, I don't know, the south of France or something. Jeans and everything on today for you.
You look amazing. Wow, thank you so much. I've waited a very long time to hear that story, but I think this was the perfect time.
It was.
I think, you know, after everything we've been through this year, and to hear your story today, it was just, I feel like so grateful for my own child and Pia and all the joy that they bring. We're so lucky, and it's not easy, not one minute of it. Yeah. But
I hear you.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you. My face is sore from smiling.
No, you really opened your heart today, and you were amazing. So thank you so much, Liz.
Thanks for having me.
For listening to the Go Glow podcast, with thanks to Spotlight Oral Care. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to my podcast and leave a review. It would really mean a lot. And if you want to learn more about my story, you can follow me on Instagram at georgie.crawford or head over to my website, thegoglow.ie.